simply remind you to stay behind the podium while you're making your argument. And I will call the first case of the day, and that's United States of America versus Hugo Cruz. And Ms. Odom, we'll hear from you.
May it please the court. Molly Odom for Mr. Hugo Cruz. Marco Toledo was arrested at a Border Patrol checkpoint when agents discovered marijuana hidden in the panels of his van that he was driving. Toledo was alone in the van. After Toledo was convicted, the defendant appellant, Hugo Cruz, was arrested in Chicago, Illinois as a co-conspirator. Mr. Cruz's arrest and conviction were based on Toledo's statements and his testimony at Cruz's trial. Mr. Cruz's defense was that he traveled to Mexico from Illinois with Toledo to visit his family and that was living in Mexico, and that Toledo was lying when he claimed that it was Mr. Cruz that made all the arrangements for the drugs. This case turned on Toledo's testimony and his credibility. Without that testimony, the government could not have convicted Mr. Cruz. Mr. Cruz argues that the government committed two critical errors during the trial with regards to a Brady violation and 404B evidence. An examination of the prosecutor's approach to this evidence and how that evidence was used at trial reveals that the prosecutor essentially misled defense counsel with regards to a key adversarial witness, government witness, and misdirected the jury. And what I mean by that is I'm not saying that his actions were intentional or anything like that. What I mean by misleading is that there was misleading and lulling of defense counsel with the prosecutor repeatedly saying that he probably wasn't going to call this key witness. The witness was Gonzalez, who was the insurance agent who sold insurance agent for these two gentlemen to travel in the United States and into Mexico.
Yeah, but what do you have to say about the fact that that Gonzalez was offered to the defense to interview thoroughly, to ask any kind of questions that it wanted to ask of him before they put him on the stand, and defense counsel apparently fell down on the job and did not ask him this question that you now say is so crucial?
Well, my response to that is, yes, the prosecutor did say you can question him, but this is after the prosecutor relayed to defense counsel that he thought that Gonzalez was here legally in this country. And the onus was on the prosecutor.
As I understand, the defense counsel didn't even take the opportunity to talk to him.
But
so if he represented to him, he's illegal here in this country. Is that what you said?
No. What I said was, prior to that, the prosecutor had said that they couldn't find his Social Security number, and there were concerns about him, about his whether or not he was living legally in the country.
Right. And
and when the prosecutor told the defense counsel at trial, just before Gonzalez took the stand, the prosecutor said, I'm not sure about these B-1, B-2 visas, but I think that he is here legally. And that's where the prosecutor left it. That's what's problematic about the case.
Well, why is that problematic? It seems to me that he says, I think he's here legally. That certainly opens the door for anybody to investigate whether he is or is not.
That's correct, but under the circumstances of this case, when defense counsel has been told repeatedly that this gentleman wouldn't even be called to the stand, and then the government relays to defense counsel that they think he's here legally, that's problematic because he is relaying something that he doesn't know, and it's in fact not true. And it's consistent with these circuit cases and also with a case, and I know I'm going to be asserting a Ninth Circuit case, but there's language in here that I think is consistent with our circuit cases as well. In United States versus Hanna, when defense counsel explicitly asked about inconsistent statements of the government witness, the prosecutor's cursory response that it had produced all the Brady material was not sufficient in light of the prosecutor's lack of knowledge. And that's the problem with this case. The prosecutor is responding with lack of knowledge. And this is absolutely consistent with this court's case in United States versus Auten, A-U-T-E-N, which is cited in our reply brief, where the court is very, very clear to point out that the onus is on the government. It's their responsibility when calling this witness. And what this court discusses in Auten is now the difference between this case and Auten is that in that case, in Auten, the government calls a witness that they decide to call the night before, and they don't run a background check on him. But what was problematic to this court was that the government claimed our unknown information and laid behind that log, and that's what's problematic in this case. And the reason is that because of the shortness in time and because the prosecutor didn't run the check, that doesn't change known information into unknown information. And so even though the prosecutor didn't know that he was here legally, the prosecutor took this at face value without investigating it. And as the court points out in Auten, it's the prosecutor who has ready access to the relevant facts.
How is it his obligation to investigate whether the man was here legally or not for the purpose of this trial?
Because it goes to impeachment purposes in this case. That is information that can be used.
You wanted the prosecutor to do the defense counsel's work.
No.
You wanted him to prepare the defense counsel to do a cross-examination.
No. What I do want the prosecutor to do is not mislead counsel. That's what the issue is here. We asked for any Brady material, any possible impeachment material, and the prosecutor repeatedly said it would not call this witness because there's some problems with the witness. And then when we continued to ask, even on the day of the trial, are you calling this witness, again the prosecutor said no. So we are not prepared to cross-examine him on that issue. And then just before he's called, the prosecutor says, I'm calling this witness. And what the prosecutor should have said is, and he is not living in this country legally, because that is absolutely...
He didn't know.
He said he thought he was. And that is misleading, and again, lulling defense counsel.
Okay, why don't you tell me why it prejudiced you?
Okay.
If it doesn't indicate that it was a different outcome, then we're talking about nothing.
That's true. When we're talking about this case on a Brady issue, it is not whether or not it would have received a different verdict, but whether in its absence he received a fair trial, understood as a trial resulting in a verdict worthy of confidence. So that's the question. Did Mr. Cruz receive a fair trial? It's based on Toledo's testimony and his credibility. The defense is that Toledo is lying. You have the only witness who corroborates that Mr. Cruz was making the arrangements. All of the other witnesses for the government are witnesses that say that the drugs were found in Toledo's van and witnesses that confirm that the two of them traveled together. But Gonzalez is the only witness who corroborates it. And impeachment evidence absolutely goes to Brady material, even if the Third and Seventh Circuit have held, even if there's not an agreement between the government and the witness and the government's witness. And this is because it goes to the witness's motivations and his expectations for testifying. And here you have someone who is living and working in this country illegally and could certainly be hoping to remain in this country in the same way if he testified on behalf of the government, and could be hoping for leniency or a benefit for testifying. You also have him in our motion that was filed after the trial. He said that he checked off as a witness statement that he was a United States citizen, and he was not. That goes to his credibility. He also was unable to identify Cruz the first time they showed him a photo lineup. And also, as I said earlier, when you look at how this evidence was used in terms of to corroborate his witness, that's what makes it significant. If the jury had heard that the first witness that the government put on after Toledo testified was a witness who was living and working in the United States illegally, that certainly cuts against the government's case, and it goes towards the defendant's case that this case was built on lies. You had Toledo, who we claim was lying, and then you have the first witness who is living in the United States illegally, working illegally, and has lied and said he's a United States citizen. That is significant. And that does go to, that does throw a different light on this case. And I think it would have a jury seriously considering the government's case. Let me see if I've answered your questions here. I think this also goes to and addresses, Judge Jolly, your concern with regards to reasonable diligence on the part of defense counsel. I think to hold that the defense counsel fell short when the defense counsel had been for not investigating a government witness when the government said it wouldn't call the witness, and to hold them accountable for taking what the government said at value that he thought that he was here legally, I think to hold that it was a defense's responsibility is inconsistent with the aim of Brady and its progeny. And I also think it's inconsistent with Auten and with the other cases that has looked at this balance of what responsibilities does the prosecutor have. And in this case, it was the prosecutor who called and paid for this witness to come down from Illinois, who made a decision to take his response on face value, and who did not investigate, although there was a red flag. And he knew very well that there was a red flag in this case. And I do think it goes directly to the defense in this case and cuts against it, and there's prejudice. Also, I think when this is combined with the 404B evidence in this case, that has a significant effect on the case as well. The government uses a case that's over 13 years old that happened when Cruz was a juvenile and to show that he has a prior conviction. And even the district court instructs that this information is going to knowledge and intent. The government also uses it for knowledge and intent. And what the issue before the jury was Toledo credible? And so you've got a jury being as the court has discussed in Guerrero, when looking at the prejudice, looking at whether or not there's a risk of unfair prejudice, confusion of the issues, and misleading the jury. So instead of deciding whether or not Toledo's credible, they have information of knowledge and intent that confuses the jury as to, well, certainly Cruz was a part of this then. And it's an instruction that the district judge says that knowledge and intent was a key issue, when actually the judge admitted afterwards and in his findings that Toledo's credibility was a key issue. And also, one more thing I wanted to point out with regards to the significance of Gonzalez's testimony is asking the court to look again at the government's closing argument, because the government specifically points to Gonzalez's testimony and says that excuse me, I've got it here at my fingertips. And says that Gonzalez gets up here and testifies for Magnum Insurance that on June 15, Mr. Cruz is the one who puts the insurance into Toledo's name, sits down, talks about the transactions, purchases, and the insurance. That's a pretty big piece of evidence. So he emphasizes that, and then in the next paragraph talks about the corroborating evidence.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Odom.
Thank you.
Mr. Turner, we'll hear from you.
May it please the court, the critical issue in this case appears to be this discovery, reported discovery violation with respect to Guillermo Gonzalez. And with respect to this notion that the government misled defense counsel, I think it's best that we see what the record shows the government and the district court knew running up to this motion for new trial. The government knew on June the 15th, 2010, that an individual, Guillermo Gonzalez, met with Hugo Cruz and two other individuals in Chicago, Illinois, to sell insurance. And he was an insurance broker at that time. No ostensible evidence of any illegality at that point in time. On June 22nd, 2011, I believe, there was an interview with Gonzalez. Again, there's no notion that he's here illegally. They have his presence, but there was some concern because they can't check his, in conformance with the Auten case, they're trying to check his criminal background, see if there's a criminal record, and they have issues with the Social Security number. So there's no evidence at this time there's any criminal record. They're having difficulty confirming his presence in the United States. What the prosecutor told defense counsel at that time, as I understand it from the record, is this. If these issues persist, we're not going to call him as a witness. So what happens is on July 18th, the day trial starts, we manage to have him subpoenaed. He comes to Laredo. He's paid for, as all government witnesses are, consistent with our procedure. He's paid for, brought here to Laredo, and he presents a B-1, B-2 visa at that time. Counsel, the government counsel for the first time, meets Mr. Gonzalez in person, sees the B-1, B-2 visa, accepts the proposition that that makes him here legally, notwithstanding the fact that it doesn't allow him to work here legally or to secure a Social Security number. He doesn't fully understand that and expresses his understanding, his lack of understanding of immigration law to the defense counsel, tells defense counsel he's here under a B-1, B-2 visa. What that means, you're here, you have more experience in this than I do. You can look at the B-1, B-2 visa. You can interview Mr. Gonzalez before he testifies. You can take him on whatever time you want. At trial, the interesting thing is, after Mr. Gonzalez testifies all of 15 pages, defense counsel says, we'd like to keep him here, Your Honor, subject to recall, but they don't recall him. He's not recalled. He's subject to recall, but he's not recalled. In closing argument, with respect to Guillermo Gonzalez's testimony, defense counsel briefly alludes to the fact that she finds it incomprehensible. Why would the government even bring Guillermo Gonzalez in to testify? Which in turn leads to the response noted by Ms. Odom. He's significant by virtue of the fact that Hugo Cruz paid for the insurance in cash. In fact, what we know about Marco Toledo is the only reason he's involved in this case is he has no money. He's introduced by one of his wife's nephews, I believe, to Hugo Cruz, as a person who lost his job, is having financial difficulties, and Hugo Cruz invites him to make this trip to Mexico and pick up this load of marijuana. So after trial, there's a discussion that ensues, and it dawns on defense counsel at that time that, wait a minute, if he has a B-1, B-2 visa, he's not supposed to be working here. She wants to see his A file. Well, the curious thing about that is, as our attorney mentioned on August the 8th, there wouldn't be an A file until there's a violation of a Homeland Security reason. He encounters Homeland Security in violation. The visa would put him in the country legally, and as the district judge pointed out, and I believe the accepted number is 11 million people are here illegally, perhaps on visas, overstayed visas, or for whatever number of reasons that aren't detected. And that's precisely what happens here. And in fact, when this problem surfaces, Mr. Gonzalez now has an A file because he's got an order to report to the immigration judge. On August the 10th, 2011, the district judge had a full airing on a motion for discovery in which he suggests that this evidence isn't newly discovered. Moreover, he questioned how is it material because the person you have to impeach is Marco Toledo, not Gonzalez. Now, with respect to counsel's, what we used to corroborate this case, we set it out in detail in the brief, but I would point out that on June 28th, 2010, at the time of Mr. Toledo's arrest, we had receipts which were attributable to cards to Hugo Cruz. We had a wire transfer receipt. We had the Webb County official attested to the fact that Hugo Cruz transferred the title to the car to him so they could temporarily bring it into Mexico because Mr. Toledo failed to note that he had another vehicle in which he had a permit to travel through Mexico. So in short, the district judge considered all of this evidence and determined in the end that it wasn't newly discovered. Two, the defense counsel had a fair and full opportunity to cross-examine before trial, so it really doesn't run afoul of Brady because before the witness testified, you had the evidence that you're saying is questionable. With respect to his legal status, they know, well, apparently the judge's finding is they know as well as the government should have known, and the government really should have known, that if he's got a B-1, B-2 visa, his status is questionable if he's selling insurance. But you did nothing thereafter to follow up on that, notwithstanding the fact that you held the witness back for recall. Indeed, In your closing argument, you thought so little of this witness that you dismissed his testimony out of hand as being of dubious relevance. But so in the end, the district judge found you can't prove, one, that it's newly discovered, and you can't show the materiality that you're prejudiced thereby. With respect to the Rule 404B evidence, the judge carefully weighed the evidence. There's no real time limit. The evidence showed that the first time these gentlemen got together for any length of time was on the drive from Chicago to Mexico. And during the course of that journey, Mr. Cruz talked about how he and his youth had did similar type things in the past. And then invited him to join him. We were successful this time. Would you join me in continuing this venture? And Mr. Toledo thought, if he's successful, sure, why not? It's $7,000 I wouldn't have otherwise had. So in the end, the judge says it's a similar offense. The remoteness, the temporal remoteness, will go to the jury's weighing of this evidence, and the judge deemed it probably relevant on the issue of intent and knowledge, his intent, Mr. Cruz's intent, to join this conspiracy. So I don't think the district judge abused his discretion in any respect. He did not abuse his discretion in denying the motion for a new trial, and he did not deny his discretion in admitting the 404B evidence. And with that, I will allot the rest of my time to the court unless there's any more questions.
Okay, Mr. Turner, thank you very much. Ms. Odom, you save some time for rebuttal.
I want to make a quick clarifying point because both the district court and the government, in its responsive brief, first tackle this question as newly discovered evidence. And the issue is a Brady violation. It's not an issue of newly discovered evidence. It's quite typical, and a majority of the Brady cases are based on evidence that's discovered after the trial. But the test for newly discovered evidence, the onus, and the standard of review is different in a Brady case, and I wanted to point that out. The other thing I wanted to point out is that the additional evidence corroborating this case consists of receipts that the two of them traveled together, and that is not enough information to convict Mr. Cruz of possession of drugs. This case turned on Toledo's testimony. And as the government said right here before you, the prosecutor said it would not call Gonzalez as a witness if this problem persists, that being the problem of his status in this country. And yet the prosecutor did call him as a witness, and now the government is saying this is defense counsel's problem. And it's not. The burden was on the government. It was the government's obligation under Brady. I am not asking the government to do defense counsel's work, but this is an issue where defense counsel was told this witness would not be called if the problem persists. And that is the really the heart of this problem in this case, is the lackadaisical approach to this information that was specifically requested by defense counsel and the government had an obligation to fulfill.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. O.